Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, we have lots to discuss today. We've got a very special episode dialed up, a listener-submitted topics episode. Always fun, always a good time. Preparing for a live show, boys. By the time this episode drops, we'll have that live show in the can and recorded. But Pipe, I want you to tell us about a partner, a very special partner, kind of a life partner for this show, and it's Visual Theology. What do they do, Pipe?
Yeah, I'd say we have a real sort of symbiotic relationship with them, because without the work of Josh, the co-founder and the guy who runs Visual Theology, like, we wouldn't even have a website currently. So we depend on them. They're counting on us. It's a real healthy relationship. Codependence is always good. Visual Theology, listeners, they're really a resource company for people who are interested in studying the Bible and studying theology in a kind of a refreshed way, where it's not just dense words on a page, but helping bring to life those things in scripture that it can be hard to picture, whether it's numeric things or how the Bible connects with itself and references other parts of scripture, just basically putting visual aids for big concepts into play along with some clear written teaching. If you go to visualtheology.church, you can see the books that they have, and then they also have things like posters, things like t-shirts, stuff that essentially gives visual representation to any lessons or theological topics or Bible passages that you are trying to teach or trying to study. So it's great for homeschoolers, great for Sunday school teachers, great for youth pastors, Christian school teachers, or just you and your personal use. So again, go to visualtheology.church. And then for our listeners, if you use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout, you will get a 20% discount off of your entire purchase. So that can be off of a single book or something that you're buying for a whole youth ministry or something like that as well. It's kind of standalone stuff. I haven't seen a lot else out there that's like it. It's pretty exceptional. Go check it out. Visualtheology.church. And then use the code HAPPYRANT to get that 20% discount.
Beautiful. Ron, we still got Pipe doing promo reads, don't we? We kind of teased that was going to go away, but it's still
we
here.
Did. But I think I think some things need to continue when they create such a
buzz,
bastion of beauty.
Exactly. Piper, you mentioned something.
I feel like maybe we should take a break and go into a promo spot just so that we can lead off the podcast with like
compare and contrast
promo. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. True. Exactly. Piper, you mentioned something in your promo that I want to do a second on websites. Like, you mentioned that we have a website for the show because of our relationship with Josh in Visual Theology. Shout out, Josh. But I wondered in the social currency of 2022, like, where do you put having a website? Like, I haven't had an author website in like 5 years, maybe, because like 5 years ago, I became an old man. I went through like second puberty and I stopped caring about a lot of things and I got rid of that. But like, do you guys have websites and do people care? Are people impressed with like people having websites? How does that play in a modern context?
I think having a website is a little bit like having a college degree, in that it doesn't
everybody
matter.
Has them, but it doesn't do anything.
It doesn't matter. It's not impressive. People without them can mm-hmm. do just as good or better things than people with them. But it's a credential that kind of puts you in a certain sphere where it's like, all right, check that box. There's some legitimate, mm-hmm. there's it kind of legitimizes you. So it doesn't matter at all, mm-hmm. but it matters.
Yeah, that, no, that's a good way. That's a good way to say it.
So I do have one, and I don't do that much on it. It has like a blog feature built in that I write on, you know, 3 times a year. And it's mostly just where people can find books, podcast articles. It's just sort of an archive / oh, this is a legitimate person. We can Google him. There's a contact form if we want to invite him to speak, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Baby, do you have a website?
No, I never have had like a personal website, only because I can't seem to find anybody to build me one. So shout out anybody out there that wants to help me out. I'm serious. Anybody that wants to help me out.
Dude, all right. We're doing business here. I like
this. There's some cash available, but I just literally, nobody's ever stepped into the picture for it. But it's so funny, man, because like when I'm looking at like artists, when I like find an artist or a band I like, it's incredible like at how many of them only exist now on, you know, social media or Bandcamp. Sure. I mean, like it's rare that it has to almost be like an older artist that had one 15 years ago and they still have their website kind of a thing. But it's not the first place everybody goes anymore, like at all.
Yeah,
but,
you really don't
like,
need
Pipe,
it.
But like Pipe says, it is kind of a, where do I go that I can get like comprehensive info on one person or one artist and know everything that they've done, all their releases? That's really what it's good for. It's almost like being able to like post like a big, you know, like a mural of all of your work. And it's like, there it is.
Yeah.
You know,
if you need to share more than like two kinds of things. So like if you're a touring artist and you have merchandise and you have, music to stream, like a website is the place where you can put all that information. If you just have Instagram, you can link to very, you know, minimal things. Or if you just have Bandcamp, it's streaming music. So yeah, it is kind of old school, and it's kind of like, it feels a little bit like you shrug and you're like, I guess I need one of these. Not, you don't sort of brag about it. You're like, well, on my website, I say it's kind of racist.
No, I love it. I feel like on my website, I say was like a 2004 thing, as was this next thing I want to talk about, boys. You two are men of the cloth. You're both pastors. I'm a non-pastor. If you're new to the show, that's the dynamic of the group. But I have a question for you. Where have youth pastors gone? I feel like, similar to websites, youth pastor as an occupation kind of had its apex mountain in like 2004, and it's kind of been on the decline ever since. Where have they gone? Like in my church kind of tradition or tribe, there's no youth pastor. There hasn't been a youth pastor for a long time. Some guy just does it. But like every 2 weeks, my kid goes to youth group, and like a lot of kids go. And I'm not even entirely sure what it looks like. Like, I think they have some fun, but it's basically just a guy giving another sermon. What happened to youth pastors?
Where have all the cowboys gone?
Dude, Paula Cole. I have that record. I love that song in the 90s.
Okay, I think I have a relationship with that song?
I want to do 30
seconds. No relationship with that song.
Of course not. Don't even know it exists.
Yeah, I know it exists. I was the one that just said it. But I think I have an answer for you, Big T.
Bill.
I think there's two things. And it's so weird because I've had this convo, you know, recently with some people.
Yeah.
But so I'm sure Pipe has more to add to this. I would say there's two things. And I think it's a little bit of a tribal thing. So with church plants, the focus has shifted because church planting has been, you know, kind of a big thing over the last couple of decades. Mm-hmm. And for church planting, which is like kind of getting that Sunday launch thing just happening, right? Like we're just stressed out. We got to get Sunday. We got to build people. Mm-hmm. We got to have a church, you know, all that good stuff. Like your big thing is not to get a youth pastor anymore out of the gate, but to get a worship leader. So I think it's shifted from in the old days, you would go your first, if you were just a solo pastor, your first order of business was finding a youth pastor, even if there was only like 3.5.1 kids, you know, that you had to youth pastor. Now it's like, no, the emphasis more is like Sunday gathering. We need to have a worship leader, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's it. And then I think
Go ahead. Yeah. Keep going.
Well, there's the other thing to it is that in our tribe specifically, and it's a generational thing, you know, youth groups, I'm not talking about youth ministry. There's probably a separation between those things, but youth groups have taken kind of a hit in terms of being something that, depending on how they're built and how they're run, they haven't proven to be a great thing for a lot of our youth. Right.
Yeah.
And so, I think there's been a pushback against youth groups. So it's kind of a thing where it's, hey, we want to provide something for our kids, but we want to do it differently than how they did it in the 60s, 70s, and 80s and 90s. And so it really isn't going to be a big emphasis. And, you know, if we can just get it like a volunteer to run it, to lead it, then we're going to be all right with that. So I think those are at least two things that I've seen that have been kind of the reason why, like, the youth pastor model, with the exception of like different traditions, different tribes, and bigger churches, that'll have, you know, massive youth groups and all that stuff. But I mean, specifically for what, like, we're all involved with and what we do, it is a, it's becoming a little bit of an anomaly in some ways.
Yeah. So I have a theory on that. And Pipe, I want to hear you on this. My theory is young adults are actually the new youth, and church planters are the new youth pastors. So like in the way that you were looking for like a cool sort of hipster youth pastor to like guide your youth, like kind of people in that 20 to 33 age bracket kind of act like youth still. So the church planter has sort of stepped into the role of youth pastor, and we've just kind of kicked the can down the road by like a decade. Any veracity to that theory?
I think that's an intriguing theory, especially because when I was a teenager, teenagers were still willing to do a lot of silly things. Like when I think back on what we did as a youth group in terms of the fun stuff we did, parents weren't writing notes complaining to the youth pastor about, you know, the safety of this and whatever else.
That's true.
We just did insane stuff all the time. And second, like we were willing to be embarrassed in front of people or be gross or, and nobody does any of that anymore. Like it's not a, you can't bring somebody up in front of a group of 100 teenagers and embarrass them for fun anymore. You know, you're going to get fired.
You can't embarrass anybody.
You're going to go to jail. Yeah. You can't do gross things. You can't play any contact sports. You know, that, and yes, I sound like a grumpy old man, but also it's true.
Yeah.
So teenagers have made the shift.
And I'm kind of glad because of that too, Pipe. So,
well,
yeah, but, I mean, like 16 year olds today are like, I want to tell you about the 94 chapters of my like Tolkienian ripoff novel that I've been.
Well, no, but I love how Pipe's like, they don't do gross things anymore. That's such a bummer. I'm like, I don't know.
I didn't say it was a bummer. I just said like it is a lot easier to program a ministry when you can be like, let's all throw paint water balloons at each other for an hour, rather than what do we do with 100 disaffected teenagers who would rather stare at their phones than interact with people? Or
yeah, that's true. Like parameters have really changed.
Or who are hyper aware of their own mental health on a more serious note than, you know, and so they're like, that would be traumatizing to stand up front and be embarrassed, which is, that's probably true. I do think that the church planter as youth pastor thing has some veracity, not because church plants are juvenile, but because teenagers now are a lot closer in their kind of social interactions and mental state with like 24-year-olds than they are with 12-year-olds, which wasn't the case back in the day. I think, I think the other thing that has killed youth ministry, for better or worse, I have mixed feelings about that. I think there's two things. On the very conservative end of things, it was the move towards multi-generational ministry, you know, family ministry. Churches have family pastors now, not youth pastors. And so,
yeah, that's right.
Nobody knows what to do with the teenagers. So there was kind of a move towards that. The other thing that killed it was youth pastors got absolutely dragged for like 15 years.
Like
when social media took off, the first kind of Christian memes that were hits were making fun of youth pastors. The youth pastors constantly talking about his super hot wife and all of that stuff, the frosted tips and whatever else.
Yeah.
That was the first guy who got made fun of. So at some point, it stops being a thing that people desire doing. They're like, I don't want to be the butt of all these jokes.
Right.
And so you kind of moved to, you know, teenagers changed, youth pastors got dragged, multi-generational ministries took over. And I think what we have now, by and large, there are still churches that do it well, but there's not sort of a programmatic like thing, is we just have a hole in our churches of how to help, you know, 12 to 18 year olds feel connected, have meaningful relationships, be part of the church. And youth group did provide that. The problem was usually it was a little bit separate from the church. It was like its own little pod. And then they left it and were like, the rest of church is boring.
Is there any, like, can you even buy a book about youth ministry anymore? Could you like go into a Lifeway and buy like a new book about it?
You can't go into a Lifeway and buy anything anymore. So
that's true.
That's, you know,
you can't go anywhere and buy
anything.
Rest in peace,
Lifeway stores. There are people who, so I would say that it's not like a shift in industry because it's still pretty small, but there's a guy named Mike McGarry who I think we actually promoted one of his books several months ago, who's starting to do more kind of thoughtful youth ministry stuff. So more youth discipleship, youth, kind of the theologian youth pastor. So what he's trying to do is take like the Southern Seminary guys who go into youth ministry and be like, don't be the seminarian nerd who can't connect with students. Who's like, let's study Calvin's Institutes and turning these kids into little, little theological tyrants. But also don't be the Frosted Tips goofball who's talking about a super hot wife. Like, maybe there's a third way to do this well. McGarry, and I think he has sort of a group and podcast and things starting called the Youth Pastor Theologian. So that that's a good one. That's there's good stuff out there. Mostly though, I don't see a ton other than it's all issue based. The stuff that I'm aware of on high schoolers, where it's like gender dysphoria or kids and phones and technology and stuff like that. Not just like youth ministry seems to be a whole industry that has died.
Yeah, it's weird that I'm getting nostalgic for those books that I never read, but I knew they existed.
I mean, I took a youth ministry class in college as just one of my electives, and I thought it was so dumb. But at the same time, I look back and I'm like, you know, it was dumb.
What did that look like?
But it was better than not doing anything.
Yeah. Did you get like a month and a half on Ultimate Frisbee, or like what did that even look like?
I don't remember. I mean, it was kind of a four views on youth ministry thing. So then you end up writing a paper on like your philosophy of youth ministry. And you know, I went to Wheaton and there was just Young Life stuff everywhere. I will say the other thing is in like in the suburban South, megachurch youth ministries are thriving. And things like Young Life and FCA are thriving. So there is...
Young Life is basically like pre-Greek life for Christians. You know what I mean? If like you're a certain kind of like super cool suburban kid.
Yeah, it's kind
of... It's like pre-Lambda Chi, you know?
Christian frat and sorority life for sure. And I think they still kind of get away with some of the same youth ministry shenanigans we did back in the day, again, for better and worse. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but that, so like suburban Nashville still has churches with huge youth groups, still does like huge events, puts tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars into their youth ministry. And then like our church has like youth small groups where they're genuine friends with one another and they don't do anything gimmicky. There's not a single gimmick about it, but they've done a good job with more of the relational discipleship side.
Yeah, very cool. Boys, let's take a break. I want to come back with another question.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in... Anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, boys, we had another super thoughtful ministry-related question from a listener. And Big R, I want to float this one by you first. Pastors, bad at communication? This guy thought, like, I send a text, I send an email. It's like a week and a half before I hear anything from my pastor. Where are you at on that, baby? Is that something that you see? Is it something that you don't see? Is it just this guy's issue? Where are we at on it?
I mean, yeah, I think for sure you see it. I think it depends. I don't think it's across the board. I think it's like anything else. I don't think it's something you can relegate to just pastors and pastoral ministry. But I think Maybe a little. I don't know. You know, guys are either good at, you know, connecting in all of the ways that we have to connect these days, or they're not. You know, like, it's funny to me that, like, also, you know, I have a whole group of people that I send texts to that I have a lot of confidence in are going to get back to me in a timely way. And then you have other people that you text and you're like, man, if I hear back from them by like this time tomorrow, that'll be awesome. That'll be success.
Yeah.
And you just kind of go like, I know you're getting these things. I don't know how your world works. I don't know what your phone settings are. Like, I don't know how often you check your email. Like, like all that kind of stuff. So it's like, so for pastors in general, I would say it depends. I have guys that I feel like I don't even click send and they're already writing me back, you know?
Yeah.
And then other guys where it's just like, man, it's been not like it's been 9 hours and I think I already found the answer to my question. You know, because I had something to ask you, kind of a thing. But,
right.
You know, and then there is kind of a thing now, too, with dudes where it's a lot of pastors now are like they're becoming super disciplined with phones and media. So,
like, I'm going dark from 8 to 5 or whatever.
100%. Yeah. So it's like, dude, so sometimes.
And they love to tell you about it, too. Let's not forget that.
Absolutely.
Part.
They do. It's like it's like the CrossFit of like media, right? It's
that's
like
true. Yeah.
They're like, yeah. So, hey, man, if you ever try to get a hold of me from, say, I don't know, 8 a.m. through 6 p.m., you know, my phone goes dark between those hours. And you're like, okay, so you have
this business hours. Yeah.
You have this window between 11:45 p.m. and midnight where I can get in touch with you. Sweet. You know what I mean? Like that. Like, let me just say our relationship is really going to progress if that's really the case.
Right. You know? After I'm done watching all my shows that I'm going to tweet about tomorrow, like you can catch me for 15 minutes before.
Well, dude, and it can be frustrating, right? Because at some point you're like, I'll look at Big M and I'll be like, so I guess me and this dude aren't really going to be great friends at the end of the day. Because it's so narrow. So between 2:30 a.m. and 2:35, that's my window. And you're like, yeah, okay.
Dude, I want to lean in on that for a second because you mentioned something that's really interesting to me, and then Pipe, I want to hear you on the broader question. Do you feel like you have to be great friends with everybody? I think there's a newish pressure where, like, so you'll meet a dude, and the dude wants to like start doing best friend stuff immediately, and I'm like, I don't know, just functionally, we live 9 states away. We're not probably going to be best friends, you know, and it's fine. Like, there used to be a category for sort of second and third tiers that was fine for people, but I feel like everybody wants best friend now. And maybe there's not a lot to say about that. Do you have any response to that, baby?
Oh, man. I'm just so old now, like that doesn't happen because everybody's... Most of my friends are about 10 years younger. They all got 5.5 kids. There's no time. So I mean, if we text once a week, you know, I mean, this is getting into a whole other can of worms, right?
So that's fine.
If I'm somebody that like connects with them on a text once a month, like I might be one of their best friends, right? Because that's how bad the whole friendship thing has gotten for some people, much less dudes that are coming in way too hot. You know what
well,
I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and I guess I'm seeing way too hot a lot.
You gotta be localized to be too hot, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like
It's if not you're gonna be too hot if you're in Montana.
That's right. Know? Yeah, just functionally, it can't happen. Piper, speak to the church communication thing, and here's an aspect. Here's something I want to bring back: the church secretary. Okay. I want there to be a church secretary who's sort of gatekeping for the pastor.
As a church without a church secretary, I could not agree with you more.
Well, there you go. Like, I don't think, and this is an old school-y take, I don't think everybody in the church should be able to text the pastor and expect an immediate response. Like, that is a function of the here and now that I think is a smidge unrealistic. And I actually see it in my own industry as well. Like, there's a sense of you should be available 24/7 to every student, every parent, everybody. And like, we have a secretary in my department, and I think it would be kind of cool if people were sort of going through her a little bit more. What do you think about any of that, Pipe?
I think that's absolutely true. I think we've lost a layer of sort of like filtering out communication in an appropriate manner. So like somebody walks into the church for the first time, you know, they visit Emmanuel, they come down, they meet me. there's a lack of like, how do we appropriately connect with this person without me saying, text me, let's get coffee, which is a thing I'm happy to do with just about anybody from our church, but it becomes unreasonable at a certain number per week, you know, if all
dude and
with people who I'm like, you might not stick around for more than 3 minutes. Like, I don't know if coffee's the right thing with you, or if it's simply a matter of you need to just email somebody, get a couple questions answered or whatever.
Right.
So there's,
and conversely, if you said, call my secretary, we'll set up coffee, you would sound like an a-hole.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know? Like, I mean, nobody says that anymore.
Right, exactly. So what pastors of a certain size church have, which is great, is the executive assistant who answers in their name. So all emails run through the executive assistant. Most people don't know that they're not hearing from the pastor. And then the stuff that gets filtered up to the pastor is like actual pastoral questions. So not like, hey, when's the new members class? But rather, hey, my life is falling apart, can we talk? Okay, that's a question for the pastor, not the basic information. I think Ronnie's point about the friend thing is so spot on. I heard, I think it was Brian Loritz, who's a pastor. He just commented, he said, more than once I've been introduced speaking somewhere by somebody who's like, this is my great friend, Brian. He goes, we talk once a year. He said, I don't know if this is lying or like they just have a skewed version of friendship. And that really struck me because I remember I heard it. Mark Driscoll used to do it all the time, just to, as long as we're throwing stones. And he'd be like, my good friend so-and-so says this. And I would know both those guys and be like, I'm 100% sure they're not good friends. They just...
That was abusive when Driscoll did it. It was hurtful.
They just both published with the same publisher and had been at the same hotel at one point or something.
Guys, we know what that feels like, though. That fraternity of Harvest House authors.
Yeah.
I mean,
I could name three of them because we're talking now.
Dude, you cut me open. I bleed Harvest House at this point, you know.
But I think on the pastoral communication thing, like Ronnie said, yes, there are pastors who are bad at it. I'm bad at it sometimes. And some of it is just like the quantity of communication is so high. And this is my chance to just sort of pastorally complain. When your cell phone gets into the hands of any, you know, say 20 church members, and in my case it's probably a lot more than 20 at this point, you just get a certain number of texts and calls and you're like, I will respond to that later, and then it disappears off the front of your screen. There's no notification and you just forget. The number of emails that come in that you look at and you go, that's not urgent, so I can get back to it a day or two from now, is really high. There's a lot of those, you know. And there's just either I need to become one of those obnoxiously disciplined people who just doesn't, you know, limits when I respond and carves out the first 3 hours of my day to clear out my inbox or whatever, or there just is stuff that's going to linger. And I just apologize to people a lot. Hey, sorry, I forgot to respond to this. And I don't give them the excuse of like, I'm so busy. I just say, hey, I meant to respond and I forgot. And then I respond.
Yeah.
and most of the time people are gracious.
Yeah. You know, T, you said something interesting, man. That one to follow up on. Like, really, church secretaries have, in some ways, they're kind of like youth pastors in sort of the direction that they've gone. Because, I mean, we're in an age now where, you know, availability is a different thing than it was 25 years ago.
And that's a great point.
So, I mean, people do have access
to their
pastors in ways that I would say back in the day when the church functioned a little more corporately and you had the big guy in his office and you always had a church secretary. I mean, there's like a reticence for churches to sort of set themselves up like that now because they want to be a little more organic. They want to come off a little more friendly and of the people. Mm-hmm. And so to hire a church secretary is a little bit of a strange thing, especially if she's just there to answer the phone. And because I mean, who's calling and who's not just making a direct connection with the people in the ministry? Like, who's calling a church? And then I would say, who's walking into a church?
Right.
Like, who's stopping by a church on a Wednesday at like 2:30 p.m.? It's like, I don't know that we really have that culture anymore. So a church secretary would be a woman that's like sitting there. And if, again, if she's, unless she's just doing admin, or she's an administrative assistant for like the pastor. I mean, like, what would she or he even be doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
I guess
weird.
I don't
it's
care.
Just a different thing.
Yeah. But you know, in the way that all things do, especially in the church, that pendulum will swing back
for sure.
Right. Like by the time we start reincorporating like taupe and fake ficus trees, and by the time we go back to like 90s megachurch models and stuff, we'll get that secretary back. It'll be sweet. Yeah, it'll be like they never left. All right, boys, let's take a break. We'll come back and hit one more topic. All right, fellas, here's another one. This is a weird one. Another listener submitted topic, and for the life of me, I kind of don't know much about this, but I have ideas. He wanted to know our thoughts on people using gaming. So like, I'm assuming video gaming is like a full-time job / a ministry opportunity. And the 94-year-old man in me wants to immediately pan this idea as ridiculous. But I want to give my take on it, and then I want to hear from you guys. My take, and this is born of 20 years of being a professional writer, is that if you take something that's really fun and you make it your career, it gets less fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand that that's the dynamic of the group going into it, or else you're going to be really disillusioned. So I think maybe there are a bunch of people that want to make video games their career. But then, like, if you roll out of bed at, you know, 8 a.m. and you got to stack 9 hours playing video games for your job, maybe it becomes less fun. I don't know. Pipe, what are you hearing about this out in the wild? And do you have a take on it?
It's, man, I honestly don't quite know how to get my head around it, because on the one hand, I'm kind of conceptually aware that gaming is huge, you know, multi-billion dollar industry, people pouring themselves into it. There's, you know, entire sort of entertainment streams built around watching other people play, which I'm assuming is how you would make gaming as a player a career. You'd be one of those people, as opposed to being a game designer or something like that. But I don't know anybody who outwardly just sort of wears that jersey. You know, I know people who are social media influencers. I know writers. I know songwriters. I know, you know, people who are in all sorts of sort of creative industries that are what you just said, where people take something that's really fun and creative and enjoyable and turn it into a money-making career type of thing. And it has a weird feel about it. I don't know anybody who does that gaming-wise, at least not outwardly. Now, that might be because gamers tend to be a lot more introverted. I don't know. But so there's this huge disconnect between this thing is a massive industry that influences so many, especially, you know, sub 25, sub 30 year olds. And the fact that I don't know people who are involved in it deeply. So I could give sort of principial takes on how to do any work, but that's boring and nobody cares. And those people aren't listening to this podcast anyway.
Yeah. Big R, thoughts?
Oh, dude, I literally got nothing. I don't think I literally know anybody that would self-identify as a gamer in my life right now. I mean, I know that dudes do it. I don't know. Yeah. I'm like Pipe. I don't know anybody that does it seriously. That just wakes up and is like eating cereal all day while they get, you know, all the cliches, right?
Yeah.
Is gaming, so pardon, if your children are listening, give them earmuffs right now. Is gaming like porn? In that it's a multi-billion dollar industry that tons of people are involved in, and nobody will outwardly admit it except in like an accountability group.
Yeah. I feel like you're onto something there, Pipe, in that nobody's like, hey, like you meet with dudes for small group and the other guy's like, hey, what'd you do today? Nobody's comfortable being like, oh, I played video games for 7 hours. You know, like, There's a sort of social societal pressure to have something else going on in your life besides that. And Big R, you mentioned something that I want to follow up on. You were like, I don't know any dudes that would identify as gamers. And by dudes, I assume you meant like adults. Whereas the thing is socially acceptable if you're 16, but if you're 23, it becomes gradations less socially acceptable to do it all day.
Right, you know? Except for the fact that like it's become an industry, and it, like you can go take college courses on how to be like a professional gamer now and stuff. So like it's definitely, I would say it's a sub 30 thing now because of how it's grown over the years. So so anybody in my age group, anybody between 40 and 50, it's going to be something that may, you know, if they have some games that they enjoy, they do it with their buddies on occasion for fun. But I mean, to meet those dudes that literally just wake up in the morning, drink their coffee, eat their cereal, and they just start gaming. Like I don't know those guys, right?
What?
And
you it's know, a here's fascinating the thing,
maybe,
thing to think
maybe
about,
I
though.
Do know those guys, but like you just said, they're not laying it out to their pastor that that's what they were doing.
Let me float a theory by you. Go ahead, Pipe.
I was going to say, I just wonder if the more I think about this, and this has some kind of heaviness to it, is. If there are tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people who are that invested, do we not know them because their entire life is lived in like a tiny geographic space centered around consoles, chairs? Like they're not part of any small groups at church. So of course we're never going to hear about it. Like their entire kind of community exists via the headset. And the stream.
Yeah, they live in an alternate world.
Yeah, I mean,
it's alternate world kind of
which,
stuff.
You know, we talked several weeks ago, kind of in a semi-joking manner about sort of the metaverse and church. But if this is where gaming is, which I think is probably pretty realistic, then all of a sudden that alternate universe type of thing is like, oh, they're already living in it. They're just living in version one of what will morph over time. We are not living remotely close to it, so it seems totally foreign to us.
Yeah. And maybe it behooves you to have someone on your staff who, like, understands the appeal of it. Like, I think as these things are happening, you fall into one of two camps. You're either the kind of person who's really drawn to that for a variety of reasons, right? And they're not all nefarious. So you're either really drawn to it or you're really... drawn to like for me, video gaming is like blowing into the end of a Nintendo cartridge and like jamming it in there and trying to make it work. You know what I mean? Like that was kind of where my experience with gaming ended, I guess, in a significant way. But so like there's a person who's trying to cling on to the past and a person who's really interested in the future. I don't know, maybe to your point, Pipe, maybe we would do well to understand that a little bit better.
It's a generational thing, I think, man. It's like, I think too, like, especially church culture. So, you know, church culture is people in their 20s are, you know, I think of it as being like a singles person's, you know, kind of game too. So you can have people in their 20s, you know, coming into your church and they already have 2.5 kids, you know, they're working jobs. So again, it's going to exist as if it exists in their life, it's going to be like it was for me and you, T. It's like something occasionally you do for fun or whatever.
Yeah.
Or maybe you know somebody who has a man cave, and maybe someday you end up in that man cave, and maybe someday you watch them play a video game for hours and hours, and they never turn it over to you to give it a try.
It's so dangerous for you to go there rhetorically, because who gets the text or the phone call first now? After this episode drops,
I mean, I have no clue. It's probably not going to be me, Big T.
Okay.
It's probably going to be the friend that I am live subtweeting right now in this conversation.
Yeah, no doubt. That's like an old school, like analog subtweet. I guess the last thing I wanted to ask about the video game thing, though, and I know we're going long and I should wrap it. Like, if you were Jackson Pollock's pastor decades ago, and you're sitting in your little clatch of pastors doing the I'm so hard thing, and your I'm so hard thing would be, I've got this guy in my church. All he does is paint. He's really kind of weird. You know, he's not really going anywhere with it yet. Like, what do I do with this guy? You know, I mean, are video games sort of the modern version of that paradigm? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean,
maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I would say no.
I don't know what the creative sort of, Jackson Pollock created cultural goods. And video, you know, if you're playing video games, you're essentially a consumer. It'd be more like the person who just is a total film nerd who just watches and watches and watches. But the principle is still the same in that And I thought, man, just in the last couple of years, I feel this pull where the separation between me and the generation below me is such that it's so easy to just like take a crap on everything that they think is cool and everything that they enjoy, yeah. which is the quickest way to make them discount everything I am and say. So if I would like church to matter to a 20-year-old or a 17-year-old, mm-hmm. then I can't mm-hmm. sit here and say gaming is the dumbest, because all of a sudden the thing that they yeah. are excited about, I just said is the dumbest, which is exactly what old yeah. people did to me. And by old people, I mean people yeah. 20 years older than me when I was yeah. that age. And it made me disregard them. Whereas the ones who, yeah. who paid attention and were like, okay, I don't understand that at all, but I'm glad you enjoy it. Like, even just that sort of neutrality
yeah.
left the door open. So yeah. I have to really catch myself and not be like, this is absurd. What a dumb way to spend time, blah, blah, blah. Which really just means I wouldn't yeah. spend my time that way. And it doesn't show them any sort of dignity or respect.
Well, I agree with you, Pipe. I think that's 100%. I mean, I don't think we have to. I think we have to learn to understand like what the pulse and the motivation is behind it. But to your quest, T, mm-hmm. the difference between Pollock was that like he was contributing something. He was contributing a particular kind of creation that is going to.
Yeah, but not at the beginning. Yeah. Like at the beginning of his career, it was like, oh, this guy's stupid. All he does is like splash paint on a canvas. But then they're. You know, by the end of it, there had been some momentum and
well, there's still a product though. There's still something to show for the time. Whereas for somebody that's just going to play video games, all they're doing is what, breaking records or know what I mean? They're winning trophies if they're part of those tournaments or they're
sure.
I don't know. Well, now you can teach. So not necessarily, because now you can be somebody who actually teaches college courses on gaming. So you can become a professor of gaming. I'm not even being flippant right now. So
I know.
As the thing ramps up, like it's like showing that it has a particular kind of like, like it contributes to society. Like Pollock, we would say is contributing to society in a way that now we can look at some of his work and we can say that was meaningful. Whereas if somebody's just gaming, like, I don't know how they're making a meaningful contribution to society. But I don't know, you know,
I have two quick comments on that and then we'll get out. One is flippant. And one is serious. Here's the flippant one. Just because there's a college course on something doesn't mean it has any value at all whatsoever. And I say this as a college professor.
As a former marketing professional who worked with people who studied marketing, I wholeheartedly concur.
Right. They could sit in a room and play video games together for hours and it would maybe be more valuable. The second comment, though, and this is to something that you mentioned, And you were making this really good point that, like, as old people, we can't just take a crap all over everything and say it's dumb. I actually don't think video games are the dumbest thing. And this is born of, like, spending the last couple years in my office sort of peering over the shoulders of my sons as they play their video games. They're actually quite interesting. I think there are quantifiably things in our culture that we do every day that are way dumber. And I guess I don't have any more to say about it, but they're not the dumbest thing.
Well,
why don't we end with
comparing the dumbness of a couple things just so that for context, I'm certain that we have listeners who are like, no, there's nothing dumber than spending 7 hours a day playing video games. Okay. I'll pull one out there. Reading romance novels, equally as dumb or dumber than video games, because you get sucked into them for hours and they present a fantasy world that's not real and help and completely sucks you away from anything that matters. So I would put that on there right. as like the equivalent of dumbness.
Okay, I like that one. I've got two. This one's going to be somewhat controversial and somewhat self-indicting as well. I think being the type of person who watches hours and hours and hours of prestige TV, dumb.
What is prestige TV?
Prestige TV is like the kind of niche platformy. It's the show everybody's talking about. It's got a whole bunch of nudity in it, but you kind of explain it away because it's quote unquote artistic. The kind of crap that people have been doing for a decade. You know,
it's whichever show is trending on social media. So it was Game of Thrones. Now it's Severance is the one.
Yellowstone.
Those kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my one thing that's dumber than video games. My other thing, social media. Way dumber. Just way, way dumber than video games. I'd rather my kid spend 3 hours a day blowing people away on Call of Duty than like tweeting.
Yeah, it. I would get specific with social media and say social media arguments, and then like social media reels, where you just get sucked into like the 30-second video after the 30-second video. Yeah, equally or more dumb. Certainly the arguing more harmful than gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Big R, you got any more to add? Dumber things than...
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, I agree with you guys. I mean, especially on the social media thing. I mean, just to, in other words, you're talking about like what is something that isn't like, it's not really promoting like your intellect, or it's not promoting the state of your heart very well. It's it's kind of putting you into a perpetual alternate universe. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like Pipe just said, I mean, yeah, argumentation on social media. I mean, like one of the best social media users I've ever known in my life is Big M, in the fact that she's not on it all day. Mm-hmm. She usually has a couple of pockets where she scrolls for a very short amount of time, and she always finds like an article or something meaningful out of it, puts it down, and then, you know, is able to say, gosh, I read this great article today, or, you know, I really had this thought based on this. You know, this person really, you know, posted a scripture and had a perspective on it. So, I mean, she really uses it for like information gathering. And I think, okay, that's, you know, I mean, that's like anything else that you would gather information and learn about things. But again, it's her own level of like self-discipline and not getting sucked into those kinds of threads and never being argumentative and never, you know, never getting into that aspect of it. But I think the other side of it, which is just, what's the difference between gaming all day or literally spending your life incessantly tweeting, incessantly arguing? I mean, you're not promoting anything good intellectually or even in your heart, you know? So
No, good word. That being said, follow us at Happy Rant Pod on all the platforms. Subscribe, rate, review. Check out my other show at Cluckcast on all the platforms. And boys, this has been fun. Those are good listener submitted.
As long as we're promoting things, listeners, we have... Yeah. We have a Patreon account, so if you go to patreon.com and search Happy Rant, it is where you can support us financially for anything from like $1 per month to whatever you want, and we drop bonus episodes there kind of weekly, but we're not as consistent. So I'd say once every couple weeks we drop a bonus episode there, and it's just a great way to help us cover production costs and everything and get some additional content out of it. So go to patreon.com, search Happy Rant, throw a couple bucks our way, get some free content.
Boys, we've done what we always do in this program. We've wandered to and fro throughout three topics. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Looking for ways to stay positive? Brighten your day with the free Story Behind podcast. Hear weekly short stories that showcase true joy, love, and hope. Listen now at lifeaudio.com or by searching for Story Behind wherever you get your podcasts.